This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Joining me, as always, we got Steve Smee.
How's it going, everyone? Good afternoon. A very special episode. We have another great guest.
Yeah, we got Trevor, Mark Moldliner in the house. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's a beautiful day. It's a nice, brisk day in Chicago area. Doing my thing. But yeah, couldn't be better. Couldn't be better.
Monday, living the dream. I know the feeling.
Monday is my favorite day of the week.
You know what? Me too. And you know, everyone like gives Monday a hard time. You know, you read these Garfield comics where like he's complaining about Monday. But if you love what you do, you look forward to Monday.
Honestly, I just like doing things people don't do. A lot of people are like, oh no, it's Monday, or thank God it's Friday. I'm like, dude, seriously, like if you really hate your life that much, do something about it to change it. And I've always been one of those. I just don't like being a sheep. I don't like being like a Democrat or Republican. I'm like, I don't want to be like lumped into a group. I want to be an individual. And that's how I try to teach my kids. I'm like, because when you start following a group, that's when you start doing dumb shit like rioting. You know what I mean? Like if you were an individual thinker, you'd sit back and think, wait a second, why am I destroying my own neighborhood? So that's some thought process things I like to get my kids to think at this point in their life.
So the first question I have for you, Mark, is most of our listeners will know who you are. I mean, you're a professional bodybuilder. You're a successful supplement company owner. You own a successful online supplement store. You're married. You have great kids. You're well known on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. You like one of those things would be impressive, but you do them all.
Thank you.
What makes you tick? Like I want to know, like, what gets you out of bed excited every day? Like, I would almost think like for you, what's still there to do on your to-do list? You know what I mean? It seems like you've probably already knocked everything off.
I've always lived by the mantra that complacency is mediocrity. And I really don't want to be in a position in life where I'm satisfied. And I think that we all never, I like when people ask that question. I think this goes a lot with what you guys do on this podcast. From what I've listened to is that we all look at, is such and such natty? Is Doug Miller natural? Is Phil Heath natural? My question's always been, who gives a shit? Who cares if they're natural? If you choose to stay natural, be the best natural you can be. Get better every single day. If you choose to be enhanced, just look at the risks involved in doing that. My goal in life, what used to get me up in the morning was fear. But before I had children, it was absolute fear. And I know people are like, what do you mean? Fear and revenge. People always said I couldn't do something. And I was broke. And my family came from a position where we had something. My dad had a good job. My mom became a drug addict, lost everything. So I've been in a position in life where I've had and lost. So before I had children at the age of 25, I operated out of fear and operated out of I was almost fight or flight at all times. Like I couldn't relax. After I had kids, I don't want my kids to ever experience what I experienced. And I want to make sure they have the best life possible. So it changed. It evolved. It's still the same thing. Before I was fearful for, you know, I was fearful of losing everything that I worked hard for. But when I had kids, I was fearful of them needing. I'm okay with my kids wanting stuff that they don't get. Like, I want an Xbox game. No, shut up. Go do your homework. You know, I'm good with that. But when my kids, when I can't provide the basic Maslow necessities for my children, that's when there's a problem. So I guess I'm always rocking with that. But on another note, I'm just obsessed with what I do. I'm obsessed with customer service. I'm upset. If I get a message, like last night, Katie's like talking to me. I'm like, hold on 1 second. I noticed a message on Instagram. It probably wasn't that important, but I'm like, dude, I got to answer this guy. Like I'm obsessed with what I do. And that's a good and bad thing. But I'm saying I've been able to apply that to marriage where now I'm obsessed with being a great husband and father. When before that wasn't even on my to-do list. My to-do list was, you know, build an empire, secure their future. But in the process, like here's where that mindset's bad. You kind of forget that, wait a second, everything I'm working for, I'm completely fucking up on this end. So it's a balancing act that you'll never perfect, but hopefully you can apply that mindset you have in the gym and in work to life. And I think then you'll reach relative success.
I was going to ask.
I got one thing quick, Steve, then you go. Mark, do you do any like day trading? Do you buy any stocks? Are you into the stock market at all?
I'm not, mainly because I'm one of those guys. I read a book when I was 20 called Focus by Al Ries. He wrote the book on positioning for marketing with Jack Trout. And it basically said you need to be a master of what you do. Everything I do, I'm an ex. I claim this very loosely because expert's an overused term, especially in this industry. Like, if I'm going to be a marketing guy, I'm going to learn everything I can about marketing. If I'm going to be a guy who's a fitness guy, I'm going to go to Exos. I'm going to get across. I'm going to learn everything I can about fitness. I don't have the time now. I do pay attention. I listen to Fox Business. I read the stocks every day because it affects my business. It affects the country. But at the same time, I don't have time to play the stock market. So what I do is I put my investments, other than 401k and, you know, normal stuff, retirement funds like that. But I don't have time to focus on that. In fact, I don't even know how much money we make a year. My wife handles that. I'm always just focused. I'm just laser focused on what I do, on what my main core competencies are.
The reason I bring it up is my dad is a math professor, and he basically taught me how to day trade. He basically taught me an algorithm where you can predict trends in the stock market. It's kind of like gambling, right?
Yeah.
You might win a single hand, but the casino always wins in the end, right? So yeah, that's kind of how day trading works, is you can predict trends and you can use an algorithm. Yeah. But anyways, what makes me tick, and I can see the same thing with you, is just because something's working doesn't mean it's optimal.
Yes.
Right? So let's say I'm making money. Let's say this year I made 8%, you know, on my money. 8% is great, but could I have made 10%? Could I have made 12%? Could I have made 14%? And that's what gets me going, you know, is because it's pretty easy to find something that works. And I mean, like, if you're relatively competent, I mean, you can find a decent job. You can make, you know, 60, 70 grand per year. But is that all you want out of life? Or can you maximize that into more? You know, can you get even more? Steve, what did you want to ask?
I'm a big believer in, like, if you are, you've got that negativity in your mind, you could give that person $1 million and they'll squander it. But if you take a poor person who's got the positive mindset to be successful, you know, you can, if you switch that mechanism in your brain, it's almost like the laws of attraction, laws of being positive. And I think that from Mark, if what you're saying is right, that you had those, you know, types of things in your life happen, you know, that have, and you were able to overcome them and become this successful person, you know, then that makes you that type of person. Because I went through the same thing myself, by the way. I think people who knew me growing up would be shocked at where I am today and
yeah,
what I've accomplished. But what do you have to say to those people listening? Because we get some of these people come on our forums all the time, and the shit hits the fan in their life. I mean, medical problems, wife divorces them,
oh God, yeah,
financial problems. They haven't been to the gym in 2 years. They can't get their shit together. Mm-hmm. How do you bounce back from that negative domino effect of everything's going wrong? Like, how do you reverse that? Because you did it. How can they do it?
You know, it's almost a snowball effect. You just need something. You need to do minor things. I'm not saying in one day you wake up, you're like, I'm done. Life's going to be great now. But it's all about choices and decisions. And I think that's where a lot of, my political stance is neither Democrat or Republican. I lean towards more of a libertarian, and it's about personal responsibility and choices. Like, you look at things that go on in life. Like, for example, where I grew up, a lot of the people I grew up with either went to prison or didn't make it. They died. They got killed. So the thing is, we were both in the same setting. We were both in the same, but I made different choices. I didn't go to that party that night. You know, I didn't do drugs. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. I made choices where it's like, and luckily for me, football, I found football, and I was mentored by a gentleman named Coach Miles and Leon Hatton. You know, and essentially my sophomore and through junior year, I was mentored by these guys. But the main thing it did, it taught me that, or they taught me obviously hard work is a must, but also it kept me off the streets. Like, I was training 6 hours a day. I knew I wasn't getting into college with my brains. So I'm like, I got to learn how to get big and play football. So lucky there was a 6'3", 300 pound outside linebacker coach and an outside linebacker named Leon, who kind of took me under their wing. And it's funny, like, you look at, like, I kind of feel it's like, who is your motivation? Oh, you know, I looked up to Mark Cuban, or, oh, you know, I looked up to my role models growing up, obviously my brother was one of them in business, especially. He's very successful, but I think that I don't even know the guys anymore. Like Coach Miles and Leon Hatton. If you look at like, if I ever write a memoir, it's going to be like, what the hell is he talking about? Like I was inspired by, I was inspired by two dudes who actually knew me, who I trained with every day, you know, and they didn't have to take me under their wing. You know, I was just an undersized white kid playing in a very competitive division in California. Yet they were like, you know, this kid has it, you know, he can bang. And me and Leon became good friends, and you know, it went from there. So I think it just takes that turning point where you decide you're going to make things right, but you also know that it's not going to happen overnight. Like I didn't go from being, I dealt with my anger management issues when I was from being a kid in a situation that wasn't optimal for years up until my early 20s. You know, like what are you going to do to fix it? Like my wife and I, marriage problems, terrible marriage. I'm not terrible, but I mean, everybody goes through marriage problems. It's marriage. Two people will never be 100% amicable at all times. We had to go to counseling. That was our step. That's what helped us. We took that step. And counseling wasn't like we went once. We're like, oh my God, it's all good now. Let's go have sex. No, it was, holy shit, we need to do this for another 3-4 months. And then hopefully we can reevaluate if we need it anymore. So it's just a matter of identifying where you need to improve and then working and improving that. Like if you have a sticking point on a deadlift, you're not just going to go from 135 to 405 in one day, adjusting the pitch of your hips. You got to work at it.
So the football helped you when you were younger. Do you think the guys today that are in their 20s, 30s, or even 40s who are going through these issues, they can use fitness to kind of get their shit together? And how can they do that? Should they join a gym membership? Should they start out slow?
I can hop in here quick. So Mark, my dad, he's a math professor. He's also a pastor. He's one of those people who does everything. But he's okay, a pastor, and he specializes in people who have addictions, right? And whenever someone – and he gets people all the time, just like Steve. You know, his wife left him. He lost his job. He lost his house. He gets in with the wrong crowd. He's addicted to coke now. He has nothing. He has nothing to his name, you know. Mm-hmm. My dad says, just do something. As long as you're doing something moving in the right direction, at least you're going to get there. You know, and once you start seeing, you know, at least something positive in your life, it gives you that, hey, I can do this. You know what I mean? I'm not a total screw up. Yeah. You know, so like it's hard, you know, for someone who was a lawyer, who had a huge mansion, who had a beautiful wife, who had kids, you know, who had the beautiful family and everything.
Yeah.
You know, start working at McDonald's, but at least, hey, now he's at least got a job. Now he can at least buy groceries. Now he can at least, you know, save up and buy a car. So, I mean, that's what I would say. I'd love to hear what your opinion is. But my opinion is just do something. It doesn't even matter what you do, but as long as you're doing something positive, you're going to get there eventually.
There's a wonderful book I'll recommend if you haven't read to read it. It's called The Power of Habit. Have you guys read that? That should be on my Christmas list too. That'll be on my Christmas list too. Now, there's a couple books. One is Talent is Overrated that I keep 4 in my office at all times to give to people. I literally keep some in stock because I'm like, dude, you got to read this book. I'm like, screw it. I'm just going to bring it tomorrow. And The Power of Habit, you know, it goes over like scientific studies where smoking, look at the addictive properties of nicotine, this and that. They replace it with another manual movement, another hand movement that replaces that movement. So you're absolutely correct. Do something. And what fitness does, they also go over fitness where someone, you know, go to the gym in the morning and set, you know, you lay out clothes the night before. It's been shown to increase your going to the gym time exponentially. So the key is to set proper habits. Like there is a, look, my mom's a drug addict. I have an addictive personality. So you're good. You're not going to get rid of your personality. That's there. Like that's your personality. So the question is, how do you replace negative addictions with positive actions? And that's the question. So you're absolutely correct, is do something. You know, sitting around and you know, you got to look at the drug epidemic where your dad's dealing with. A lot of it has to do with pain management, which can be mediated by training and exercise. What happened essentially, and they even had to go talk to the doctors in Ohio. We had our Real Weights for Real Heroes event where he donated over $60,000 to veterans. That was in Middletown, Ohio. That's the heroin capital of the world, like above Afghanistan. Like there's more drug overdoses there than anywhere. And, you know, you talk to the troopers there and they had to go to the doctors because what happened, the doctors are just prescribing all these pain medications and then people get on them. So it's usually like for my mom, it was military service and car accidents that got her. And also just mental issues from, you know, killing people in war and this and that. So, yeah, I mean, you, there's going to be something that causes you. Like, nobody just wakes up and goes, now I'm going to become a heroin addict. Because when you try heroin, you're at your last. Like, heroin's not like weed. Weed, you smoke it, you give it up, it's fine. Heroin, it's a lifelong commitment. So, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you just got to look along the way and just realize when you're making a decision that could potentially alter or end your life.
So, I mean, I wasn't aware of that thing with your mom. Now I know why you do so much for the veterans. Can you tell us, is that veteran thing still going on? Is that you're going to have more events coming up or what's going on with that?
July 21st, 2018, we will have our second Real West Real Heroes. We're going for $75,000. And hopefully we'll give them more YouTube celebrities or celeries, whatever you want to call them. Last year was really great. My mom was actually served in the Israeli Defense Force. So that's what's really funny. But we're first generation Americans. So I was raised with more of a sense of patriotism than I think a lot of native born, like people who whose family was here before, you know, the first generation. Because you realize you hear stories about, even though Poland and Israel, where my mom's from, aren't bad places to live, they're not America. So I have tremendous respect for what our veterans and everything go through. And I'm also, keep in mind, like I told you about my political beliefs, like I'm an isolationist, but I understand these guys are out there doing their job. And the reason we have the freedoms we have is because of them. So, you know, not to make this a political show, but I don't think, you know, regardless of your political stance, I think that we could all agree that, you know, this country need, you know, everything's in like marriage. We have a great marriage, but we had problems. Like countries are going to have problems. So you just have to deal with them and work with them. And those guys are the ones who give us the right to speak our mind and have problems. So, you know, that's what we put a lot of time and effort into. And we're trying to be more and more charitable and, you know, going and doing things. Talk about, you want to really improve your life, Trevor, here's an idea. Like I've been doing some things where instead of going to like the Olympia, I went to Houston to help out clean up with Hurricane Harvey. And I'll tell you what, man, you look at what people have and lost and it'll change your perspective on how blessed you truly are.
One thing I really thank my parents is they forced me to do volunteer work. You know, as a kid, I'd be like 14, 15, and they'd make me volunteer at, you know, like a soup kitchen for a couple hours, you know, and you're some 15-year-old kid. You're like, this is stupid. I want to skateboard. You know, I don't want to hang out with a bunch of homeless people. But when I would go there and, you know, you would realize these people have nothing but the clothes on their back, you know, and they're so thankful just to get like a meal or something. It really made you realize how blessed you are. And I still do that. You know, whenever I'm feeling sorry for myself or, you know, like I wanted to accomplish something, it didn't work out, I'll go volunteer at a children's hospital. And when you spend an afternoon with a five-year-old who doesn't know if he's going to live to see tomorrow, and then you think about what you're complaining about, it makes you want to slap yourself. Like, it's just like, you're like, wow, I don't want to curse, but you're like, I'm the biggest bitch to be complaining over this when, you know, here is this kid. He doesn't know if he's going to live to see tomorrow and he's smiling. He's happy. He's just happy that he has today because he doesn't know if he's going to get tomorrow. And here I am complaining that I only got second at some bodybuilding show or you know what I mean? Like something that's so like stupid and irrelevant.
Oh yeah. We had four different individuals, including Casey, that won like Mosler Mitchell and Derek Carver, who lost one or many limbs in combat. So you see my 11-year-old daughter and my 9-year-old son, like I have two legs and two arms because these guys fought for my freedom. So, you know, it gives them less excuses in life and they realize how good they have it to have their health. And my daughter growing up had a best friend with cystic fibrosis. So, you know, you talk about watching your friend go through having to do 3 hours of therapy just to breathe. You know, it gives you perspective. So I think we can always look at things like, no matter how bad you have it, someone would really want to be in your shoes instead of theirs.
Have you ever been to a third world country, Mark, like Africa or anything like that?
I've never been to Africa. I don't know if Mexico and Brazil count, but Brazil should.
Are you religious, Mark?
No, I'm agnostic, but I'm one of those guys who I'm all for the Ten Commandments, you know?
Okay.
But anyway. My problem is I question too many things. And, you know, there's if you don't have factual things, like a lot of scientists would be like, well, I'm atheist. I'm like, well, wait a second. I understand they haven't proven God exists. It's all about faith. We haven't proven he doesn't exist. So I'm going to just leave the option open, you know?
That's the thing about science is, like, I'm in academia, right? You can never say prove. You can say these studies suggest this.
But that's why never say
prove, because for something to be proven, you'd have to run an infinite number of experiments, right?
Infinite.
You can never say prove. If I ever wrote a thesis paper that had the word prove in it, immediately they would just rip it up. Whatever scientific journal I tried to submit it to, they would rip it up. And not only that, they would call me an idiot.
So we can't truly prove that Brad Castleberry lifts those weights.
You can't. It's impossible.
It's not infinite.
What even happened? He's lifting like fake weights or something?
Yeah, it's funny because I could give two, but basically there's this, the reason Real Weights came about, it's really funny, is Steve was like, look at, like, I didn't even know who he was. And Steve Shaw, who's our editorial director, said, Mark, you got to see this guy. Like, he's like doing weights like 600 to 700 pounds on bench, like repping it for eight. Dude weighs like 220. And I'm like, all right, this guy is Guinness Book of World Records. And he's claiming world record. So Steve's like, dude, we should call him out. And he's not going to show up, but we'll just do a little event and make like $2,000. You and I will go there and invite some people. I'm like, cool. Next thing you know, the video has like 500,000 views. And, you know, we raised $60,000. So it was by, so everybody thinks I have this big like hard on for him. But in reality, I just don't care. I just pretty much used it for, I didn't expect it to get that big, to be honest with you. So it worked out.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article about that on our Evo website, and it was a lot of people commenting. Actually, that video you're talking about, I put that on my article as well. So we sent some hits your way, Mark, on that.
Thank you. Couldn't be a better cause. Like, such a great cause, great event. It was such a good event.
The thing is this whole industry is fake. Like, I mean,
yes,
I do a lot of high fashion modeling, right? I get 3 hours of hair and makeup. It's an 8-hour photo shoot where they probably take 2,000 photos. They keep one photo and then they Photoshop it. It's fake. Like, I look at the photo that gets printed, I'm like, that's not even me. Like, I look in the mirror, I don't even see that guy. Like, I don't even know who that is. This whole industry is fake.
Now you got people Photoshopping their Instagram pictures. I'm still old school. I'm like, that looks fine, post.
I don't have time for that. I don't even use filters.
The thing is, like, people like will come to your trade shows and they'll say, well, this guy, like Devin Physique, he weighs like 160 pounds. In pictures, I swear to God, the guy weighs like 320 pounds ripped, because he enhances shit, you know? Like me, people always say in person, you look a lot bigger in person. And that's because your perception of picture to reality is completely distorted.
100%. And there's also people who are very photogenic. And a photo isn't the real story. And that's one thing that always drives me nuts about bodybuilding, is people will look at bodybuilding photos and be like, this guy got screwed. Like, he placed sixth, but he should have been first. I'm like, you can't look at a photo and judge a bodybuilding show. Like, it doesn't work like that. You have to
actually at a moment in time versus fluidity, you know, and you're also looking at angles. Like, look, here's the thing. The Phil versus Kai thing will always be debated, whether Kai won. I'm friends with both those guys. I love them both to death. But in person, you have to see Phil in person to understand what you're looking at. The dude's 3D, and it doesn't
look real. He looks like an alien.
Kai looks absolutely amazing in person and in photos, but Phil photos versus in person is different. They also always manage to get the shot where he's relaxing. You know, it's like another guy's tensed. Because Phil's a dick. He'll stand there and wait till everybody and make sure he gets a step in front, which is legal. If you don't get called on being in front and getting the angle, that's called strategy. I use it. At least when I competed, I did. You know, angling is everything. Like, it's all perception. Arnold used to talk about that, you know? And then, you know, different like shows. Like, I judged a show once. There was this guy, Tim Martin. He actually was an IFBB pro. He came back and did a USBF show at the time in New Jersey. And I was one of the judges. I was actually the head judge, I believe. And he posted pictures and just blasted us on the internet. And he said the judges were fake, this and that. They hate him because they're OSB. I said, hold on, man. I said, I'm not a natural competitor. Like, I mean, the other judges are fine. But thing is, you placed fourth. You should have placed seventh because you were out of shape. I mean, we're not just judging size, or else you come in the off season and kill everybody. Dude was, I mean, monstrous. But when he did his thigh stomp and his stomach jiggled, I'm like, all right, I can't put him. He was just off that day. But I mean, the guy was phenomenal. I mean, he's a phenomenal bodybuilder. I'm not taking away from him. But like, he and I had an online spat because, you know, I was questioning my, you know, integrity as a judge. And at that time, I'm like, I probably wouldn't have been as harsh now. I've calmed down in my old age, but yeah, he was just off. So yeah, but pictures, he looked like he murdered everyone because it was that perfect angle. The lighting was on point. His abs looked good, but it wasn't like that in person.
I'm going to say one more thing about bodybuilding, then I'm going to segue the show a little bit. Yeah. The problem with bodybuilding is not quantitative, right? In a hockey game, someone scores a goal, the puck went in the net, it's a goal, right? You can argue maybe, you know, maybe like he was in the red line or something like that. But I mean, like, the puck goes in the net, it's a goal. Like, it counts. Yeah. Point. With bodybuilding, it's like art. You know, I look at a piece of art, I'm like, wow, that looks beautiful. Someone else looks at it, they're like, that doesn't do anything for me. It's like, I ask you, what do you like in a woman? You're like, oh, I'm into blondes. I like brunettes. Steve likes Asians. You know what I mean? So
I knew that about Steve.
There might be an Asian walking down the street. Me and you are like, doesn't really do much for me. Steve is like, whoa, guys, you guys go on without me. You know, I'm gonna try to get her number, right? So that's the thing, is it's subjective. You're judging bodies. You know what I mean? You might not be the flavor that the judges were going for that day. It's just, that's bodybuilding.
And if you compete, you need to accept that and realize that sometimes you might feel like you got screwed. And it's just the nature of the beast. That's why I consider it more of a pageant than a sport. I put it right up there with Honey Boo Boo. You know what I mean? It's like, for me, and I'm good with that. Like, I'm a guy who competed in that pageant, you know, but I'm not going to sit here and equate it with football or hockey. I just, even though these aren't, now it not being a sport does not mean that those competitors are not athletes, okay? But I'm not going to sit here and, you could debate that all day long, but, you know, I don't put it in the same vein as I do a baseball or a football, you know, because there's a tangible goal.
I agree. So Mark, recently on your YouTube channel, you did a bunch of different diet experiments. You know, you did intermittent fasting, then you did keto. Yeah. I'm not sure what you're currently doing now. What was your favorite? What did you like? What did you dislike about all those diets? We've talked about fasting quite a bit on the show. We actually had Dr. Gary on, who's an expert when it comes to fasting. And I agree that there's health benefits associated with fasting. Like, I don't deny that. But just from my personal lifestyle, I hated it. I was kind of like you. Like, I did it for a couple of days and I was like, hey, this isn't so bad. But by like a week, I was like, I just want to eat breakfast. Like, this is ridiculous.
I love toast. You know, here's the deal. The problem is a lot of the data that they're quoting was done on 24 hours to a week. You know what I mean? Like, they're, and the thing is, did you see the new Lean Gains study?
I didn't.
They did a study on Lean Gains. I actually have a video about it that should be going up this week. Steve's just doing the whole SEO thing for it. You know, the thing is, they showed that there are some differences in health markers that you know, it benefited health and there was fat loss. However, because it was I forgot what it's called, but where they do the diet and then they report what they ate. So it's not very strategic, but even in that, the intermittent fasting group ate 200 less calories. So all of the results were actually parallel with a lower caloric intake diet. So essentially what they found is it's not good, it's not bad, it's kind of indifferent. What it shows you is that living by the clock and eating every 3 hours isn't necessarily going to be the golden egg or what you're looking for. What the Lean Gains study that they recently did showed us is what I've been saying all along. If you enjoy that eating style, do it. But like, I get questions like, hey, can I lose fat without fasting? And I'm like, people have been doing it since like Arnold, like before then, Steve Reeves, like we don't have to fast. And for me, I didn't like it. Like, it wasn't my thing. Like, for me, you know, it's cultural. Like, you get up in the morning, I sit with my kids, I have breakfast, you know, and it was just weird.
Yeah. I actually did a 10-day fast, a prolonged fast.
Oh shit.
That was the hardest thing, was the social aspect. Mm-hmm. Like, if I go to a football game, I want to tailgate. I want to have barbecue.
Yeah.
I want to take my girlfriend to a dinner and a movie. I can't have a little popcorn with her. I can't take her out to dinner. The social aspect of fasting was the hardest thing.
Horrible.
That I went through. It was an amazing experience, but it's so hard in today's world. So Mark, I mean, like, overall, because you're a very lean guy and you're a very big guy at the same time. Okay. It's one thing to be fucking skinny with abs. Okay. It's another thing to be a monster with abs. You are
I'm skinny with abs, but I'm not a monster. So yeah. Like,
but Mark, the thing is with you, it's one thing also to be just a bodybuilder, like to inherit a trust fund and just bodybuild all day and work out and fuck and sleep. All right.
That sounds like that's what I want to retire.
But you got that's a family, you got a full-time job. You're busting my ass. How the hell are you so big yet so lean? Like, yeah, help us out here. Like, what is your secret here?
Well, what does the internet say, or what's the truth? You know, the thing is that for me, it's consistency. Like, I don't eat enough for my body mass. I maintaining lean mass, I do think it's years trained, and I'm smaller than I used to be at my biggest, but you know, you look at, I mean, even Seth Verosi, who's a phenomenal IFBB pro bodybuilder, you know, he's downsizing, but he's a freak. Like, he makes me look like a child. So I think it's just a consistency thing. Like, everybody always talks about, with drugs. And I'm like, first of all, if I was taking the amount of drugs it takes to what people perceive stay this lean and big year round, I would have been dead years ago. Another thing is, you look at a Doug Miller, and Doug's a good friend of mine, and he is natural. If I found out he was not natural, I'd be shocked. I mean, because I've literally traveled with this guy, and he is clueless when it comes to steroids. He really is. But, you know, I think it's consistency. Like, we've aimed, and we haven't, like, the thing about steroid users, they usually get really big, and then they shrink. But if you consistently gain, keep in mind, I've been doing this since 1994. If I started at 170, I consistently gained 1 to 2 pounds a year. Okay, that's 40 pounds of lean mass, which isn't off. I was 170 as a sophomore in high school, and I'm 215 now. At my peak, I was 240. That's a consistent gain of 1 to 2 pounds a year. It's not that hard to believe if you don't take time off. A lot of people, you're just talking about this earlier. Oh, yeah, and I haven't been able to go to the gym for 2 months. What if I told you I haven't missed more than 3 days of training in those 20 years? You know what I mean? In those over 20 years, I haven't missed over 3 days of training. I haven't slipped on my diet, meaning I haven't like stopped eating or done something stupid in all that time. I've been consistent. Same with Doug. You're looking at older guys. Like, I was a lightweight competitor in my 20s. Like, I was 150 to 170 pounds.
I can vouch for you, Mark, because I've actually been following you since the SciVationBodybuilding.com days.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I know I'm dating myself here. That's how long I've been on the boards. But, I mean, what you said is true. I mean, and same thing with me. You know, if you look at past competitions, I get a little bit better every show. You know, there's never like a huge jump. It's like every year I put on a couple pounds. And same thing with you. I remember you used to compete as like a middleweight. Like, you used to be like,
that was my favorite look too. I loved it.
You were shredded to the bone. I used to wear that little SciVation black beanie in all your photos.
I love that look,
man. I was thinking about even sending you an email. I'm like, man, lose the beanie. Like, it just looks stupid because you got these posing trunks on. You're looking like a bodybuilder.
I don't know what I was thinking. But then I looked at pictures of like my dad yesterday when he was alive, and he wore stupid shit too. I think I did it just so my kids can be like, what was dad thinking? You know, but I think it's about consistency and years training. I think that also when you get to age of like 35, 36 to 40, you know, there are certain people like obviously Mike O'Hearn and Dwayne Johnson who are just, they're in their 40s and they're bigger and freakier than ever. You know, and I don't think Mike O'Hearn has aged since 1990. I think he's 90 years old now. But these guys are just genetic freaks when it comes to that. But, you know, you start to kind of realize around your late 30s, early 40s, that, you know what, the gains that were coming slow these years, they're not coming at all. So then you're like, okay, long-term, you look at heart health. It's not healthy. And I'm speaking for someone, let's assume that Mike O'Hearn and Dwayne The Rock are natural. Okay, let's just, for the sake of this conversation, I mean, you know, over time, you're going to realize, hey, you know what, weighing 240 or 260 pounds is a lot of stress. Your joints start to hurt. You know, things start to, you age. Aging's just a natural process. You do your best to combat it, but there are certain things you need to pay attention to when you're getting older. And I mean, you realize that when you're in your mid 30s, and you know what, your recovery isn't, you know, you're not gonna be like, man, time to train back again. You know, you're like, my back hurts. You know, and I think that's what happens.
Yeah, I'm approaching 40, and man, shit's, shit's changed a lot.
Yes.
And, since I remember when I was Trevor's age, I could just go work out every day and bust like a madman. And I see people in the gym like do such shitty form. They're younger guys. And I'm like just shaking my head. I'm like, dude, keep that up. You're going to blow out shoulders. You're going to have joint issues. So it really changes when we get older. But on the heart health thing, that brings us into one of the things I was talking to Trevor about before the podcast started, which was Rich Piana. And this is a topic that's kind of just disappeared everywhere. I think everyone talked about it, and now no one talks about it. And that brings us to the heart health thing. Rich Piana, he had an enlarged heart, correct?
Have they declared his cause of death yet?
He had an enlarged heart. He died of a heart attack.
So it was a heart attack. Shit. I didn't even know that. I've been kind of staying off of it. Every time you even mention it, and this is to his credit, like the guy had an extremely militant following. And I mean, they, judging by their emails blasting me, they didn't spell very well. I'm just playing. Older emails are just in all caps and yelling, Rich Piana is better than you. I'm like, okay, sure. You know, whatever. Rich and I didn't get along well when he was alive. We had one trip together to Australia. It was the most awkward experience ever because he stood for something I don't stand. Like, he was all about, like, the guy had a fake chest. He had fake, I mean, everything was fake about him. And that's kind of what I don't like about the industry. So naturally it was like fire and ice, but I also said on the same breath, I've never seen anybody work harder than Rich Piana. The man worked his ass off. And getting to the enlarged heart, obviously he took drug use to the next level, even beyond any IFBB pro I've ever met. From guys winning the Olympia to guys who won the Olympia, his drug use was well over what they even, and this is just what he tells you about. Like, we don't know. He was real, he told us, but did he tell us everything? Like, we know he never told us about the stuff in like his arms, like what it is. Like, it's just this. No, it's not. Because your girlfriend back in the day said you should go to Mexico and get this. And I'm not calling him a liar. I'm just saying there's some incongruencies in what he's saying. So to extrapolate why his heart was enlarged, he was an athlete. He did train. Athletes have bigger hearts. He took it to that next level. And also athletes who compete, like let's say a triathlete, they have larger hearts than a normal sedentary American or individual. But they're also, you got to assume that just, I mean, you're in academia. I'm just a guy sitting back. I read data and I extrapolate my own outcome based on common sense. You're smarter than me at this, I'm sure. But I look at, if you're 300 pounds and an athlete, meaning that you exert high intensity, like weight training is essentially high intensity interval training. You're going hard, you're stopping. You're going hard, you're stopping.
It should be. You know, a lot of people, they do a set, they walk to the water fountain, they chat for 5 minutes, they do a set. But weight training with 60-second rest periods, yes, it is high-intensity interval training.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's assume he did that. He's also – now, he's that in itself is putting him in an athlete zone. And he was really big, so that athlete heart is going to be pumping to this body. The heart, even though a smooth muscle, is going to compensate and do what it can to pump to all that mass. And then you throw on all the other stuff he took, like – do we even know the heart? I mean, is there any data on what happens to the heart with exogenous insulin you don't need? And yeah. I'm talking super physiological insulin, not like a type 1 diabetic who's just trying to process their carbs from meal 2. I'm talking about a recreational, like, okay, I'm going to take 20 IUs of friggin' insulin.
Here's the problem, Mark. When you take anything anabolic, whether it be steroids, growth hormone, insulin, it's not localized. It's systemic, right? Yes. So when you take steroids, it's going to cause your biceps to grow 100%, but it's also going to cause your heart to grow because your heart is a muscle. It's a skeletal muscle. I mean, sorry, it's a cardiac muscle. It's not a skeletal muscle like your biceps or your quads, but it's still a muscle.
True.
That's one of the problems. Another thing is when you're that big, your arteries lose their elasticity. It's just the body is not designed to be that heavy.
I think we both agree, though. I think we're on the same page in that the size is just as much of an issue. And that's why my the only thing we have to go by, because there's no controlled studies on this, is look at even the Rich Gasparis, who, while big, wasn't huge. Look at the Lee Labradas. And look at the guys who actually downsized. Even though we know those guys were on handfuls of oral steroids and whatever they took, especially at that time, oral steroids, we didn't really – think about the liver health at that point. I mean, they were taking literally handfuls of Dibble. So you know, my only thing to go by is, other than Munster, who literally diuretic himself to death, you know, do we have, we don't have much data on the smaller guys like Matarazzo, you know, 300, you know, 270 to 300 pounds of the off season. You have, you know,
there's four main reasons for it. Size.
Yes.
Drugs.
Yes.
Way too much red meat.
I agree.
And not doing cardio that really gets your heart rate up and gets you sweating. If you look at what most, if you're 300 pounds, it's uncomfortable to move. You're so freaking big. Walking up a flight of stairs is a workout for you.
Yeah.
If you look at what cardio most big bodybuilders do, they walk on the treadmill. They're not, you know, doing intervals on the spin bike. They're not, you know, doing battle ropes till they're out of breath. You know,
they're walking on the treadmill. And they train like pussies. They really do. A lot of these guys. So that's, I've seen Rich train. Rich would do cables and just do this.
That's the problem. We can talk more about this off air because I'm doing my master's research on cardiovascular health. So I'm like an encyclopedia on this stuff. But when you do really hard training, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter whether it's weight training. It doesn't matter if it's CrossFit. It doesn't matter if it's yoga. But anything that really gets your heart rate up, it increases the elasticity of your arteries.
Yeah.
That's going to prevent, you know, heart attacks and things like that. The problem is basically your heart gets so big, your arteries get so stiff that your heart basically just gives out. It's just a recipe for disaster.
So here's my thing. Here's what I always tell people. Steroids have inherent risks. And that's why I recommend, this is the biggest thing I probably get hated on, is I recommend nobody does steroids if they don't have to, if they don't have a medical reason, unless they know the reasons. Now, you pointed out four variables. There's 100%. Let's say they all equal 25%. So red meat, okay. So I can say, okay, limit your red meat, or, you know, omega-3s, stick to maybe a more of a fish, salmon-based diet. Okay, good. Number two, cardio. Bodybuilders should be in shape. They should be able to do cardio. And the bodybuilders who I know who do cardio year-round, actual cardio, are relatively like, you don't see them huffing and puffing. You know, like Seth Ferrosi, for example. Guy, I mean, you could tell when someone's healthy in person. Like Dallas, before he passed away, from what I heard, he really had struggled like doing daily activities.
If you listen to any interviews with Dallas before he passed away, and I mean, it's a tragedy. I think what happened, it breaks my heart, but he was out of breath just doing the interview.
Yeah.
Like just talking for 5 minutes straight, he was huffing and puffing. Like that's scary. Like that's a red sign.
So red meat, cardio, and the third one was size. So you have three of those. So let's say you're on steroids. If you were to focus on, or at least get part of these three right, you're still better than most sedentary folk. Unfortunately, it's size over everything and they get bitten by the bug. It's a very small amount, but if there's one thing we could garner from Rich Piana and Dallas McCarver, you know, if we can get anything positive from their untimely passings, it's that, you know, if you're going to get involved in that whatever it takes lifestyle, which is one of the reasons I didn't when he was alive, just because he passed away doesn't mean we liked each other. I'm not going to pretend like we were bros and holding hands and skipping, you know, but what we can learn from them is invaluable. And what we can learn is that you need to focus on your health. You can't, you know, do whatever it takes, because doing whatever it takes might not be what's best for whatever it takes to live. And that's the problem, that whatever it takes mentality while he was alive, everybody in the industry you talk to was like, that's going to kill somebody. And then people, you talk to people like, man, he's probably hurting kids. You know, people were saying that. Like, I honestly was like, look, people can make their own decisions. But the problem with social media and YouTube and Instagram is you got a 15-year-old who sees this cool guy with tattoos, Bentleys and chicks hanging from his arm and literally saying whatever it takes. That's very alluring. And back in the day, people would say, well, they always lied. They never said they were on steroids. Look, when I started training, I didn't know what steroids were. I didn't even know you could get them. I thought it was something you accidentally put on your chicken and it tests positive. I had no idea what they were. But guess what? I didn't go out thinking that. I didn't know that, hey, these guys inject and they're risking their lives. I had no idea. All I knew is that if I train hard and eat big, then I'm going to gain size and chicks might like. And I mean, sometimes ignorance is a good thing. Now, I'm not saying we go back to those days, but the internet with its wealth of information, you got kids who want to fit in. Teen suicide rates are, I mean, we just had someone commit suicide in St. Charles. Like, kids want to be better. They want to fit in. What better way than to follow a guy who's driving a Bentley, who has girls, has everything one can possibly imagine. And that's the thing. Kids just don't get it.
Yeah, it's like marketing. It's like an infomercial almost. And then the way you're saying it is like, wow, I never even noticed it until you actually said what you're saying. I find that fascinating. But let me ask you this. I know Trevor wants to close up the show pretty soon, but were you shocked when you heard the news that Dallas McCarver was kind of that? Or were you like, you know what, this was inevitable and I knew this would happen? Or were you like, man, you know, I didn't think they'd die so young. Rich Piana was 46. Dallas McCarver was in his 20s. I mean,
26.
26 is too young for anything. Dallas, I will say yes. Because, I mean, just earlier you see him rowing like 8 plates. And even Rich, like everybody would say, dude, he's like, and this is, again, this, I hate to be the one to say it, but like, because I know I'm going to get called out by Rich's fans. It's like everybody in the industry used to say, like, oh, if he lives another 2 years, it's great. In fact, some of his ex-employees, more than one that I've talked to, like, dude, Rich is going to be gone within the next 2 years. There's no way he's going to keep living. He had that close call at the Arnold last year where he missed Sunday because he had an insulin overdose, which, you know, that's been pretty well known. So I don't think anyone was surprised to see Rich pass away, but it was almost like he was immortal, you know? So it did shock me a little bit. I thought we were being trolled because, shoot, we didn't have false info about people dying. Like, if you Google Rich Piana dead before all the news stories came, there was already like 10 reports from like 08, 09. So it's like the guy was almost immortal. Now, Dallas, the thing that got me is, you know, I don't even want to know, but, you know, a healthy young man, you know, with perfect reflux and you're in academia, like the chances of a healthy person choking without passing out before actually choking and not being able to self-induce some kind of a thing.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. So my thing, and no, everybody's like, oh, it's bullshit. And granted, what is it, like 1400 people a year die in the US of asphyxiation from choking or some number like that. But Dallas,
they're all seniors or children though, Mark. They're not healthy 26-year-old.
Exactly. So here's the thing about Dallas. You know, the story fits. His roommate called and said, hey, he took insulin. If you've ever, like, I've never been in an insulin coma. I don't want to be. But have you ever, like, one time post-workout, just last story, I know you got to end this. One time post-workout, I was flavoring back. Remember when Waxy Maze hit the market?
And I was trying to use it. It's a freaking pain. It makes such a mess.
Oh, it's a disaster. But I was trying to flavor for Sivation. We were coming out with Carb Slam. And we only had unflavored, and I was flavoring it. I was doing a watermelon. And so post-workout, I didn't eat anything. It was after leg day. I used to train in the morning. I went to the office, and I'm making it up. I had my flavor systems out, had the bench top ready. And before you knew it, I had 200 grams of waxy mix. And I literally passed out on the floor. Thank God our CFO, Brian, came in at the time. I'm like, I need something to eat. And I literally thought I was going to die right there. Now, that was a naturally induced insulin coma. Now, I couldn't have, if I would have eaten something and I hit that, there's no way I could have expelled that object. No way. So, you know, if it wasn't for that 911 call, I would have been like, cool, let's err on the side of asphyxiation. But I think really he asphyxiated as a result of trying to beat out the insulin shock.
This is kind of my thinking, and then I'll let you close up the show, Mark. Yeah. I think like there's a smart and safe way to do anything, right? I mean, like let's take testosterone for example. You know, a man in his 40s, he has kids, he doesn't plan on having any more kids. He gets his testosterone levels checked; they're low. He wants to get on testosterone replacement therapy. He's routinely getting blood work done. He's making sure all his health markers are in check. That's a very responsible and safe way of using testosterone.
Yeah,
insulin. I mean, how many million diabetics are there self-diagnosing insulin every day?
Yeah.
The problem with insulin is a little bit goes a long way. You know, most bodybuilders, if they want to use insulin, should be using 4, maybe 6 IUs. If you put 4 IUs on an insulin syringe, that's like nothing. Like I can just see a bodybuilder pulling 4 IUs on an insulin syringe and going, what the heck is that little bit going to do?
Yeah.
They probably meant 40. Yeah, that's probably a typo. I'm sure they meant 40.
You're so correct.
And that's the society we get in, right? Is like if someone reads a, you know, a steroid cycle and it says, you know, 500 milligrams per week, they go, well, 500 is good. Imagine how good 5,000 would be, right?
Absolutely. So
that's the issue. And you know, like I think we're kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater here by saying, you know, like insulin causes them to die. It was way too much insulin used irresponsibly.
Well, yeah. And I think that's where there's personal responsibility comes in, but you know, there's nothing, you're going to have that happen. It's just, it's a shame because he seems like he was a good kid. And I've heard some great things about how he himself was a success story about how he turned around. He was abused as a kid. Like the guy is just a success story, but to get to that level of success, he made literally the ultimate sacrifice. So, you know, that's one that, yeah, I will say that McCarver, that got me because he was young, he was up and coming, and, you know, it was sad to see. And likewise, I don't think anybody wishes death on anyone. Well, I don't, at least. And, you know, Rich Piana was, I'd like to see what happens to Expos. Like, the guy drew a line that I've never seen be bigger than any IFBB pro, bigger than any Olympia winner. The guy was just an icon. So it sucks to see that.
He was a modern day rock star, 100%.
Absolutely.
So Mark, we're at our hour here. We really appreciate you coming on. Do you want to give us any plugs, any shout outs or anything? Like what's next for you? What's the next big thing on your agenda?
The next big thing for me is really just focusing on what we're doing. We have a lot of new products coming out and I can spend the next 20 minutes rattling out what we're doing, but you know, it's just growing the MTS Nutrition brand and of course building tigerfitness.com. And you know, that's what we do. And we'll do that through earning your business through, you know, great product and superior customer service. So we go into, well, here's our whole point of differentiation, this, that. If you guys know who I am, you see all my crap on social media. Hopefully we get some information out there that'll help people, get you to think a little bit. We talked about everything from our ideas of how to obtain success, how to turn things around, to how to, you know, responsible talk about, you know, some trending subjects on drug use. So I think that, you know, just keep an eye on what we're doing. And obviously, you know, we're always here.
One last thing, that Veterans Day you have coming up, the Veterans Day event you have coming up in 2018. Yes, what is the date again and where is it located?
Oh, perfect. Thank you. July 21st, 2018, Power Station Gym in Middletown, Ohio. It's a dungeon of a gym, but it's perfect for what we have. We comfortably fit over 200 to 300 people in there. And it was the greatest time. You had liftoffs between like Seth Brosi and Casey Mitchell. And hopefully next year we have someone else do all that, since we know what's going on, where I can actually have fun and participate in that. And it's just gonna be a good time. We're gonna have food catered. And you know, all it is we ask for a donation beforehand. The donation goes straight to Semper Fi. And the beauty of this, I just like to say, you always risk people embezzling funds like charity. Oh, here, buy this and we'll give, no. The donation you make to get into the event goes straight to Semper Fi immediately. So we don't touch any money and our goal is to have it as much cash free as possible. So there's no chances of anybody thinking there's anything shady. We want it to go straight to the fund. We lose money on it, you know, because we're not being like all proceeds. Well, if it cost me $20K to put on, that means they're only getting 40 instead of 60. I'd rather take the write off, you know, pay for the 20 grand to put it on and let the veterans, they need it more than we do.
Mark, I'm going to try my best to make it.
All right. Well, we appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you there.
I live in Canada, so it's going to be a long flight, but I'm going to try really hard. I should actually be able to make it. Not too much goes on in July. You know, that's kind of like downtime for the university. So I should be able to take the weekend off.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, it'll be good. We'll get a workout in. Just don't kill me.
No, it'll be fun, man. It's just a bunch of people having a good time.
For your host, Trevor Kuritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, Mark Lobliner, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life. Look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.